Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Let's do a preview of today's docket. First, an update on the Alec Murdoch matters. They just continue to keep on coming. A convicted killer on the run. Well, that has come to an end, but wait and hear what they did while they were on the run. Can Amber Heard pay the judgment that's been entered against her? Johnny Depp has inspired Kyle Rittenhouse to go sue. A bad day for that guy named Harvey. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, aficionados. You know the drill. Subscribe if you have not. Like the video if you do. Leave me a comment below. Hit that little bell for notifications. And remember, you can listen to us on any of your favorite podcasting apps just simply by searching Crime Talk with Scott Reich. All right, before we get to the docket, let's support the people that support the channel.
Like many Americans, we got a dog during the pandemic. My quarantine dog, Miss Winnie the Bulldog. Now, Miss Winnie has grown accustomed to being around us all the time. When we were leaving the house, Winnie would have extreme anxiety, so we decided to look for natural products to help with her anxiety. We looked for the highest quality CBD treats, and we were not satisfied, and neither was Winnie. So we created a high quality CBD product that absorbs faster and provides the required results faster. Baked in Colorado, CBD treats and beverage enhancers are made with nanotechnology. The nanotechnology makes the CBD extraction more pure, also allows for Baked in Colorado products to work faster. Baked in Colorado products can help reduce your pet's anxiety, ease joint pain, and help with your dog's skin problems. Go to our online store and see what Baked in Colorado product is best for your dog. When you order at bakedincolorado.com, enter code Winnie and receive 15% off your first order. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee. If your dog does not experience the desired results in 30 days, return the product and we will refund your money. No questions asked.
All right, everybody, hold on. We have got a great show for you today. It is Friday, June 3rd, 2022. Let's go ahead and open the docket. First, Alec Murdoch. Well, he is apparently willing to pay more than $4.3 million to the sons of Gloria Satterfield, the Murdoch's longtime housekeeper who died on their property back in 2018. Now, Alec Murdoch remains in jail for allegedly organizing his own suicide, which failed, and for allegedly stealing millions of dollars from his clients and his law firm. Now, Mr. Murdoch has settled the lawsuit with Tony Satterfield and Brian Harriet, who claim that Murdoch set them up with a lawyer to negotiate the initial insurance payout. They claim that Murdoch did not disclose that attorney, Corey Fleming, was his longtime friend and college roommate. Fleming has also been charged with helping steal the payout money. Now, Satterfield and Harriet will use some of the money to form a foundation in their mother's name that will benefit underprivileged residents in Hampton County. According to them, families, good, God-fearing, law-abiding, and hardworking people like Gloria, who struggle to make ends meet, will be the beneficiaries of the foundation. In a statement from their attorneys, they stated, "As we have said all along, Gloria did not die in vain. Her death now has a purpose. It was a part in taking down Alec and others, and some of those funds recovered will be used to benefit others." Now, investigators with the South Carolina Enforcement Division, also known as SLED, have asked the Satterfield family for permission to exhume her body and to perform an autopsy some 4 years after her death. Now, according to 911 calls made by members of the Murdoch family, Miss Satterfield fell while walking up the stairs and began bleeding uncontrollably from her head. She spent several weeks in the hospital before dying from the injuries. The cause of death was listed as natural and no autopsy was performed. Now, Ronnie Richter, the attorney, said, "There's really nothing natural about a 57-year-old woman falling down a flight of stairs to her death." Richter says that while Satterfield's death from the injuries makes sense, state investigators and Satterfield's family question what caused her to fall down the stairs, if she did in fact indeed fall. They hope that exhuming the body will provide some answers, and Richter says that his clients, the children, are in the process of deciding whether or not to grant the request, but says they are committed to seeing the investigation through. Now, if it's approved, it is unclear when Satterfield's body would actually be exhumed. And on another note, John Tiller, one of the attorneys for Alec Murdoch, who's kind of been there from the beginning, even when kind of the rest of his legal team has been fading away, well, he passed away just the other day, and funeral services were held today for him. And his name was attorney John Tiller, died at the young age of 60. Just another blow to Alec Murdoch, no doubt. All right, a convicted killer went on the run. This guy's name is Gonzalo Lopez, and he was on the run since he escaped a transport van in Texas last month and was fatally shot by police after he allegedly killed a family of five, then fled their rural cabin in a stolen truck. The manhunt for Gonzalo Lopez kicked off on May 12th when he stabbed a prison guard driving him from a correctional facility in Gatesville to Huntsville for a medical appointment. Now, according to the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, a brief struggle ensued between the pair before the prison bus crashed on Texas State Highway 7, about a mile and a half from Centerville, a rural area between Dallas and Houston. It took authorities spanning several law enforcement agencies 22 days to locate him. Police said 46-year-old Gonzalez was killed at about 10:30 p.m. Thursday in Jordanton, located 35 miles south of San Antonio. Now, hours earlier, police named the escapee as the primary suspect in the murder of a five family members, including four minors. Police discovered their bodies inside a cabin outside of Centerville, believed to be used by the victims as a weekend home. The names of the victims have not been released, but police do not believe they are linked to Lopez in any way. Now, Lopez, a former member of the Mexican Mafia prison gang, was convicted in 2006 of killing a man alongside the Texas-Mexico border. He was serving a life sentence when he made his bold escape last month, and according to authorities, Lopez was seated in the caged section of the prison transport vehicle at the time, managed to wiggle out of his restraints, cut through the expanded metal of the cage, and then crawled out from underneath. From there, he attacked the driver, prompting a brief scuffle. They both eventually exited the bus, and the driver at one point was stabbed in the hand and punctured wounds in his chest. A second officer at the rear of the bus also exited and approached Lopez, who got back on the vehicle and started driving down the road. This is according to the Department of Corrections. Both guards opened fire, striking the bus's rear tire, causing it to crash off the roadway. Lopez managed to flee into the woods and dodge authorities for weeks before he was killed in the shootout Thursday night. Now, police said that he had been armed with an AR-15 at the time of his death. Ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you, people that are serving a life sentence, okay, they want just a little taste of freedom before they die. And in this particular case, it shows the lengths at which somebody will go to get that little piece of freedom before they die. And unfortunately, it appears as though Mr. Gonzalez killed five family members who were simply minding their own business. But it also shows evil does exist. Evil is out there, and evil needs to be locked up forever. Next on the docket, can Amber Heard pay her judgment? Well, as we all know, the verdict came down earlier this week where Johnny Depp was awarded some $10 million in compensatory damages and $5 million in punitive damages. By Virginia law, the punitive damages are capped at $350,000. Hence, the judgment against Amber Heard is $10,350,000 in favor of Johnny Depp. Amber Heard was awarded $2 million in compensatory damages based upon defamatory statements made by Mr. Depp through his then attorney. Needless to say, the big question is, can she pay? One of Amber Heard's attorneys, Elaine Bredenhoft, revealed on the Today Show, says that the actress is broke due to the hefty legal fees associated with the defamation trial. Multiple sources claim that the Aquaman star had to switch legal representation and is relying on her homeowner's insurance policy to cover the cost of her current attorneys in the case. The bill of Heard's attorney has mostly been footed by the Travelers Company under the terms of the actress's homeowner's insurance policy. And that is not uncommon in that a homeowner's policy will in fact cover you on a defamation case. However, that doesn't mean they have to pay the judgment. So Heard's estimated net worth is between $1.5 and $2.5 million. She was reportedly paid $1 million for Aquaman and $2 million for the sequel. She also has a three-bedroom, three-bath home in California's Yucca Valley that is valued at about $1 million. She purchased that in 2019 for $570,000 via a private trust in the name of her accountant. Heard has also never made good on her promises to donate the $7 million that she received from Depp in their 2016 divorce settlement to the American Civil Liberties Union and the Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. You know, she testified that the donations were delayed because of her legal fees and bills. You know, but it's a pledge. That's almost like paying it. Depp could still potentially claim the money he was awarded by attempting to garnish Ms. Heard's wages of any upcoming movies, levy her assets, and even attempt to foreclose and seize her home in Yucca Valley. If she doesn't have the money, then this is an avenue she'll have to pursue. She can also appeal the case. Normally, when you appeal a civil case, you have to post a bond in the amount of the judgment so that basically you can pay if you lose the appeal. And no one's going to post a bond unless they know that they are secure in being able to pay that amount of money if she was to lose on appeal. So if she doesn't have any money, then his avenue while she pursues an appeal is to try and execute on the property that she owns or any bank accounts. If Depp wants to find out where Heard's assets actually are, he could serve her what they refer to as debtor interrogatories, where you summons the debtor to come to court and his lawyer would get to ask her questions saying, what property do you own? What real estate do you own? What vehicles do you own? What jewelry do you own? Any art collections? Anything else that could be used to grab and sell at auction to try and pay down that ultimate judgment that has been awarded in the favor of Mr. Depp. Now, those debtor interrogatories are often very interesting because normally, once those are served, well, the debtor usually fails to show up. Then the court issues a warrant for the arrest for contempt, and they usually set the bond, coincidentally, in the amount of the judgment that is being sought. So when the person gets arrested, miraculously, they come up with the money. So we'll see if it gets that far, or as Johnny said, it's not really about the money. Maybe he'll just let it go. He claimed his victory, but somehow I think he's going to say sweet justice will be making Amber Heard homeless. Well, speaking a little bit more about Johnny Depp, he has inspired Kyle Rittenhouse to go forward. That's right. Kyle Rittenhouse said that Johnny Depp's win in the defamation case against Amber Heard is fueling him to file lawsuits against Mark Zuckerberg and up to at least 15 others for allegedly defaming him. Now, as you may recall, Mr. Rittenhouse, who is now 19 years old, was acquitted on murder charges last year after fatally shooting two men during the 2020 Kenosha riots, tweeted that he plans to file against those who labeled him a murderer and a white supremacist. Rittenhouse wrote, "Johnny Depp's trial is just fueling me. You can fight back against the lies in the media, and you should." He said news would be announced on Fox News and on his fundraising website, the Media Accountability Project. Rittenhouse's attorney, Todd McMurdy, said that there will be about 10 to 15 lawsuits filed against large defendants, including Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg. McMurdy singled out Zuckerberg over Facebook's alleged designation of the Kenosha shooting as a mass murder incident. And this was not a mass murder incident, McMurdy said. It was clearly factually false. To call someone a mass murderer is seriously defamatory. and then to use the power of social media to basically censor any views that would take opposition to that mass murder statement is a serious effort to destroy his character. It was seriously mistaken and seriously defamatory. Facebook has an outsized voice that they can do a lot of damage as compared to somebody maybe who has a small blog with 100 subscribers. But we're going to look at everything that we have to access and that's been published and decide which ones are actionable, he added. Now, Mr. McMurdy previously represented Nicholas Sandman, the high school student who sued NBC, CNN, and the Washington Post after they labeled him a racist when he was spotted beside fellow Covington Catholic high school students shouting alleged slurs at indigenous protesters. Sandman had claimed he was there to try and defuse the tense situation and settled the lawsuit on undisclosed terms, but the rumors have it that it was in the hundreds of millions of dollar area. So maybe Mr. Zuckerberg ought to get his attorneys on this. I'm sure they already are. And next we have, it was a bad day for Harvey. Remember him, Harvey, the movie producer guy, last name Weinstein? Well, his criminal sex act and rape convictions have been affirmed by the New York appellate court. All appellate judges concurred in the opinion, and in a statement, Weinstein's spokesperson said their legal team was disappointed but not surprised. An attorney for Don Dunning, who testified against Weinstein, said the appeals court decision assures he will be in prison for the rest of his life because, as we may recall, he is serving a 23-year prison sentence. The jury and now the Court of Appeals have both rejected Weinstein's argument that he was the victim here, the victim of the Me Too movement, the attorney Deborah Katz said in a statement. My hope is that women across the country will take heart in this opinion and remember that when they come forward, even the most powerful men can be held accountable. Now, Weinstein has maintained his innocence and denied all allegations against him since they first emerged, which sparked the Me Too movement and encouraged women to speak out and share their own experiences with sexual abuse and misconduct. Now, his appeal was filed last April, about 1 year after he was convicted of first-degree criminal sex act and third-degree rape. In a motion filed last year, Weinstein's attorneys argued that the disgraced Hollywood mogul's 2020 conviction should be reversed because his trial was tainted for several reasons, most notably a biased judge and a juror. Now, Weinstein still faces trial in Los Angeles for additional criminal charges related to the alleged sexual assault of multiple women, and he has pled not guilty. An attorney for Weinstein argued that the appeal in a hearing before a panel of New York State Appeal Court judges in December, saying one juror who had written a book that involved predatory men misled the court about the book's content and should have been dismissed. Assistant Manhattan District Attorney Valerie Figueredo argued the book did not relate to the conduct Weinstein was accused of. It simply did not demonstrate that she had any type of bias or a state of mind that rendered her incapable of issuing a fair and impartial verdict. Now, Figueredo told the five judges at the Appellate Division of the First Judicial Department of the Supreme Court of the State of New York. Attorneys also argued trial jurors were overwhelmed by the bad evidence. That's the 404B evidence, other evidence of other wrongs of misconduct that were not charged, and that should not have been admitted by the judge. As you may recall, that was some of the evidence that came in very similar circumstances for Bill Cosby. This was a trial of his character, his attorneys noted, adding later that I don't think there's been a case where they can recall where the piling on has been as evident as it was in this particular case. Now, I know Harvey Weinstein is not a very likable guy, but everybody is entitled to a fair trial, and 404B evidence makes a trial 99.9% of the time, in my humble opinion, unfair, because it is about character evidence. Yes, no matter how bad the defendant is, he should be tried on the allegations that are before the court. And when you bring in other allegations just to show that he acted in conformity therewith, is absolutely designed to get around what is prohibited under Criminal Rules of Evidence 404A, that you can't put in character evidence against a defendant. You have to be charged and convicted on the evidence in this particular case to say that, well, they did these bad things once, they may have probably done it again. That's 404B evidence. There are exceptions to that, but most courts are getting away from the 404B evidence because it does result oftentimes in unfair trials. And frankly, if the prosecutor has such a strong case, what do they need the 404B evidence for in the first place? So either way, Harvey Weinstein did not have a good day for sure. All right, quick recap of our dumb criminals throughout the week. And it's been kind of a weird week because of the holiday and I had to travel, but let's get to it. Tuesday, we had Iberia Parish Sheriff's deputies instructed Tony Dominique that he needed a permit to transport his house. The instructions were ignored, and Dominique attempted to move the house down the road, hitting many mailboxes, road signs, and trees in the process. And then today, an argument broke out between two elderly men on the green at the Villages over golf etiquette. According to an arrest affidavit, the incident happened between two golfers, Richard Randall, who's 77, and his 84-year-old friend on April 29th at the De La Vista golf course on San Marino Drive. Now, around the fourth hole, a witness said the two began arguing, which was something they reportedly did often. The friend told Randall to move, to which Randall replied that he knew the etiquette of the game, referring to golf. They reportedly yelled back and forth until Randall allegedly punched the man in the face and the man fell to the ground. The victim was taken to the local hospital with visible swollen bruises on his face. Randall was arrested and charged with battery on a person 65 years or older. That's called assault on an at-risk adult, ladies and gentlemen. You can't make this stuff up. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to watch the weekly recap on Saturday. And remember, you can listen to us anytime on any of your favorite podcasting apps. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you next time on Crime Talk.